needs to be more of it. I'm not going to write it, though, because I am not good with deadlines. This is We Have Concerns. Hi, Jeff Cannata.
Hi, Anthony Carboni.
Hello, concerned citizens. Jeffrey.
Yes, sir.
Robots.
Robots?
Have we ever come up with, and I know people are always waiting for this, what is our official stance? People are always waiting for the We Have Concerns official stance on an issue. And, you know,
it's pronounced robot. That's our official stance, is it's pronounced robot.
Yeah, that's number one.
Yeah.
But how do we feel? And science is a feeling. And it's hard to distill feelings because they're always changing. They're always tumultuous. But what is the official We Have Concerns stance on robots?
Can't robe with them, can't robe without them. No? I don't know. A robot is, I think, going to be an inevitability. I think we are going to have AI progress to a point where I'm doubtful that we're going to see a humanoid, multi-purpose, you know, human replacement robot, and certainly not in our lifetime, but maybe not ever. I think we will see and are already seeing a bunch of, you know, I have a freaking Roomba that cleans the floors of my house. That's a robot.
Okay, humble brag.
Well, it's not great.
Wow, Jeff. I have a robot vacuum cleaner.
It's not great.
But no, I have one of them too. And can I tell you what? I am constantly rescuing that thing from itself.
Oh yeah, my wife gets so angry at the thing.
You never know what half of an apartment a Roomba's gonna clean. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It could be any half. And the thing is, it's not a contiguous half.
Yeah.
So when a Roomba cleans an apartment or a house, you get to play then a fun game of number one, where's the Roomba? Where did it die? Where did it get stuck?
Yeah.
And number two, what parts of the house did the Roomba clean? Because I have to now clean the other parts of the house. So now I get to play a fun detective game where I figure out what parts of the house are clean.
Exactly.
I guess based on that, would we say that our opinion on robots is not there yet, not something to worry about?
I don't think it's something to worry about particularly, but I do think I'm bullish on the notion of automation. I mean, I think it's going to cause economic havoc as it already has, but I do think that I like having a smart home, right? I like having a little thermostat that tries to learn the most efficient ways to keep my house warm or cool.
Is that robot or is that computer?
Well, I think
where's the line?
That's a mushy, it's a mushy line. And I think as
robot things, have to wheel around and serve coffee, I think.
Yeah.
I think the difference between robot and computer is computers sit in one place and think, and robot think but also do, but don't think as well as computer and don't do as well as person.
You've just defined the three laws of robotics.
Yes. Those were Asimov's three laws of robotics.
Don't do as good as person.
Don't think as good as computer. Serve a coffee.
That's why Asimov was a genius. That's why he was ahead of his time, you know?
That's why. Let me tell you something. People are so worried about the Asimov's three laws. Like, we got to make sure it doesn't cause harm to a human. Buddy, we got to stop them from wheeling themselves off of cliffs first. And I think, like, so I think this is why I bring up this story. We're talking about robots that are big enough to serve coffee. We're talking about robots that are in your thermostat. We're talking about robots that replace a person. But we've talked about before the teeniest of robots.
Oh, nanomachines.
It's the holiday. Yeah, it's the holiday season, Jeff. We have to think about the who's in Whoville. We have to think about the robo-who's.
Yeah, a robot's a robot no matter how small is what I've been told.
That's right. That's right. Ron Howard said that. Now, we talked previously about Xenobots.
Yes. Yes. The little microbe these are organic robots, right?
Right. Now, this is another place where the line goes, right? Because now we're talking about organic living machines. That's a weird thing.
Yeah.
There was a lot of like organic technology stuff in the news this week. They released a plastic that's made of like oil and DNA, like natural occurring oils and DNA.
Right.
Yeah. Like you're drinking out of a cup and the cup is maybe like drinking back. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In Soviet Russia, cup drink you.
Yeah. It's like eating. It's like the old joke of eating a tongue sandwich.
Yeah.
But
right,
it's
yeah.
like you're drinking coffee and the coffee's drinking your spit. I don't like DNA being. Here's where I come down on organic machines, Jeff.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Robots need to be metal, and they need to have little gyros that move in circular rotations around their ear sockets.
I know this is very fundamentalist of me for a science podcast, for an award-winning science podcast especially. But I do feel icky about biotech.
They need to have springs. A robot needs to have springs. Where's the springs?
It can't be like a virus that's made to look like a spring under a microscope that does. No, this, I don't like when robots is made of living material. It personally skeeves me out.
Yeah.
How do you like, does it not skeeve you out? You're giving me the runway to say all this stuff here, but you're looking at me like, let him freak out about this thing that he's freaking out about, but it's not a big deal.
I don't think it's a big deal. I think the notion of using organic material, because if I remember correctly, these xenobots were made from stem cells, right? They were made from
the African clawed frog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Not human stem cells, from a frog.
Yeah. Yeah, so it doesn't, but you're not grossed out.
I mean, I'm not grossed out.
Right.
Because right, I do no. anticipate some sort of Akira-esque blob yeah. growth thing.
At some point, arm just gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
You know, in yeah. a real goopy way.
Right.
I mean, that's my thing is like, I think I just, it's all very H.R. Giger, isn't it? You know?
At a certain point, it is. The end result is H.R. Giger, but where we are now isn't, you know, where we are yeah. now is it's adorable little blobs, little tiny, tiny, itty bitty little blobs. Collections
yeah.
of
it's
cells.
Like a, it's like a Bugs Bunny cartoon where the flea circus comes by with instruments and it's like, and like, that's what it is, right? They're cute and they're small. I just. There's something about it that skeeves me out. I understand that it's a good thing. I understand that in the future there will be more and more and more of it, and it really will open doors to technologies that we would not be able to manufacture or have otherwise. Intellectually, I understand that it's good, and I don't want to stand in the way of it. But on a gut level, it do skeeve me.
Yeah.
And this latest thing about the Xenobots. Definitely skeeves me. So, as you know, the Xenobots were created just a year ago, just like literally almost, it's almost first anniversary of Xenobots. It was like January of 2020.
I didn't get you anything. I'm sorry.
I got you a cup made of DNA. And because it's a gift, you have to drink out of it in front of me.
Okay. All right.
Like you have to, otherwise you're rude.
Does it have to drink out of me in front of you as well?
I mean, it will. It doesn't have to, but it will.
Yeah.
So this was the University of Vermont and Tufts University created this. Now, basically, these are stem cells that are taken from the African clawed frog. They are less than a millimeter wide. And the reason they have this, the reason they're creating these is for medical technology. They want them to be small enough to travel within human bodies.
Right. Put a robot inside your blood. That's not going to make anybody skeevy.
No, that doesn't skeeve me out at all.
No.
Hey, let me tell you something. We are, as far as people and a society goes, we're so good in understanding of medical technology. I can't understand why anybody would have a problem with a literal nanobot being injected into them.
Yeah.
I think right now we're in such a place in human history where people are totally chill.
Yeah. Just explain to them that it's made out of stem cells and there won't be any confusion, problem, or questioning of the
Yeah. And if they have a problem with that, be like, oh, no, don't worry. They're from a frog. No, it's totally cool. It's not a human stem cell. It's from a frog.
Yeah.
We're going to put tiny bits of frog into you.
See, what we're going to do is we're going to take a frog embryo.
And we can control them with a supercomputer from the outside.
We're going to scrape some stem cells off of this embryo, this frog embryo. And then we're going to put it in your blood.
Yeah.
See?
It's fine. It's fine.
When I explain it, now you don't have any objections.
And there are some biomarkers in it so we can track them through your body. And that's not a problem. None of this is a problem, right?
Right.
You got your shots this year, right? So this is the thing. The cells basically are formed with a supercomputer. They're basically left to incubate, and then they are cut and reshaped into body forms by a supercomputer, right? Mm-hmm. So these stem cells become clumps of cells. The cells are then cut to specific sizes and shapes, fun little shapes, by a Play-Doh Fun Factory. There are little stars and like a moon.
Yeah.
There's one that's just like a fun, silly tube.
Oh, fun.
So basically, then they create these shapes, and then they figure out how the shapes move, and then they sort of figure out uses, which I think is interesting.
Okay.
We talked about this before. They're creating these things, but not to do anything specific yet.
Just for fun.
Yeah. Well, not for fun. They're sort of like, we'll make one that's this shape and we'll see what it does. Okay, it kind of moves like this. What can we do with a living machine that moves like this?
Oh, so this is one of those examples of form dictating function, right? Because when they cut it into a shape, the shape then behaves in a certain way based on the shape. Like it moves based on how it's formed. And so that, it's like these iterative robots that you see made out of metals and stuff, they also do that stuff where what shape, how will it move with this shape? What will it do? Where will it go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do we do? What does it do? What does the robot do if we add this? What does the robot do if we add, you know, if a lot of people are familiar with the, are familiar with like the walking AIs.
Yeah, right.
That, well, you could,
teaches
that you can
itself to walk. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can play with them online and you can put like obstacles in front of it or change the shape of the body.
Yeah.
That's sort of what these are, but they're doing it on a larger level with AI from a computer that is then also watching, looking and seeing, okay, we cut into this shape and it does this. We use this clump and we cut into this shape and it does this. And then based on that, the computer is also guessing what shapes will do what movements, will figure out like what kind of functionality these little robots will have. They also add like part of their cell structure is like their own food source. So they have like their own little batteries made of like lipids and proteins. So they can survive for a week or a couple weeks if they're in a nutrient-rich environment like your fucking blood. And basically, they either look at the robots and go, oh, we could use a robot like that. We could use a xenobot like that to deliver this sort of medication. Or we need a xenobot that can block up this sort of tear or clear this sort of obstruction within the human body. We think it might look like this. Let's see. So that's what they've been doing for the last year. And one of the things that people first said, Jeff, is, hey, what stops these robots, these little frog robots, from just living in me and reproducing forever?
Reproducing?
Right. They're living things, right? So they're made of stem cells.
Yeah.
So like, can these things reproduce? Can they evolve over time? Are there generations of xenobots evolving in my bloodstream? And at the time, the University of Vermont was like, no. No, they can't reproduce and they can't evolve. No, that's stupid. That's silly. That's not how these things work. Jeff, Dateline, November 29th, 2021. Submitted to the Discord by G. Engelstein.
Oh, cahoots.
Old cahoots. I actually took a Jeff Engelstein story for myself this week. It was bound to happen eventually. I want you to know I did it under duress. Dateline, November 29th, 2021. World's first living robots can now reproduce, scientists say.
Whoa.
Whoops. Whoops.
So wait. Hold the phone. So these are just collections of cells. How, excuse my French, the fuck do they reproduce?
Well, Jeffrey, as you know, stem cells are essential building blocks for biological structures. They can turn into so many different things, depending on biomarkers, depending on situations, depending on even the host body's emotional state. From what we know, can change the way a stem cell sort of expresses itself. These stem cells are just blobs of stem cells that a supercomputer presses into different shapes. Now, Jeffrey, are you familiar with the independent film Jurassic Park?
Yeah, I've seen one or two of those small budget speculative science fiction films.
Yeah. Now, do you remember, Jeffrey, they were missing some of the dino DNA?
Oh, right. They used alligators or crocodiles or something, right?
Oh, Jeffrey, they used frogs.
Frogs.
Because Michael Crichton was a science writer, and he knew that this was actual genetic research that was probably going to be happening or was likely to happen. And so he said, we're going to use frogs. And do you remember what happened because they used frogs, Jeffrey?
The dinosaurs love to eat flies?
No, Jeffrey. Life found a way.
Oh, life found a way.
Life found a way. They remember all the dinosaurs on Jurassic Park were female. There were no dinosaurs on Jurassic Park.
That was their whole point. It's like, well, if they can't reproduce, then we've got no problems. There should be no problems. Let's bring in the public. Bring them in. Bus them in by the truckloads.
Bus them in, baby. Hire Lauren Lapkus. It's time to start a command center. Give the little girl dinosaur powers, you cowards. The frog DNA caused the dinosaurs to be able to reproduce asexually. You remember?
Yeah.
You remember the reveal of the egg shot reveal?
Oh yeah. There's an egg, and that's the we got
it's
problems
a cracked
now.
Egg. Yeah. Yeah. So what happened was these stem cells discovered an entirely new form of biological reproduction, different from any animal or plant known to science, Jeffrey. they were like, no, we're just putting these stem cells in. We press them into fun shapes, cookie cutter style. The stem cells go brr for like a week and then they die. No. It turns out, according to Michael Levin, professor of biology and director of the Allen Discovery Center at Tufts University, co-lead on this project. Remember his name during the robot revolution. Frogs have a way of reproducing that they normally use, but when you liberate the cells from the rest of the embryo and you give them a chance to figure out how to be in a new environment, not only do they figure out a new way to move, but they also apparently figure out a new way to reproduce.
Nature finds a way.
Life finds a way, Jeff. Life finds a way.
So how do they find a way to reproduce? They just like come up with a new method of reproducing?
So basically what happens is these little robots are made from about 3,000 stem cells, right?
Yeah.
And they're kind of like, you know, they're sphere shaped. And basically, they found out that in very rare and specific circumstances, the xenobots use something called kinetic replication. Okay. Now, this is a form of replication that is known to occur at the molecular level. Okay.
Oh, kinetic means it's just from movement?
Yeah. So kinetic replication is basically like, it's tough. It was tough for me to wrap my head around, but yeah, basically at a high level, like molecules can do this. They can reproduce some of their particles can be created through kinetic replication, but it's never been seen before on the scale of whole cells, let alone organisms. Hmm. This is something that has only happened. You think about molecules, we're talking about like a chemical particle, like a chemical level.
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
something that is now happening at a cellular level and at the level of a full organism. These things are basically able to like recreate themselves in specific situations when needed. They haven't figured out exactly what is triggering it, but man. These robots will just every once in a while, they'll be like, time to start a family. They'll just be like, you know, getting older.
Yeah.
Everybody else is doing it.
There's a time in every stem cell's life when it just realizes, you know what? I got to settle down here. I got to move my ass.
Yeah. So, and the way this happened was, you know, the AI is creating billions and billions of different permutations, different little Play-Doh shapes of these cells, of these little xenobots. And what happened was, and you're going to love this, this whole thing is just sounds absolutely wild to me. The supercomputer came up basically, it was like, I want to try this one. I got an idea. And everybody's like, okay, go ahead. You don't need to ask our permission. That's what you're created for, supercomputer. Go ahead. So it creates one that basically looks like Pac-Man.
Awesome.
It's a little, you know, it's just a little circle.
Did they try any that looked like ghosts, though? Like, did they try any that looked like ghosts? You know, just for, I don't know, just for
they
funsies.
Did, but they tried one that had a bow, like it looked like Pac-Man, but it had a bow on its head.
Yeah.
And now there are two different sexes of these xenobots.
Wait.
No, so basically, they came up with this little Pac-Man shape. And what happened is this Pac-Man shape, for some reason, started boot scooting around in little like spiral shapes and found stray stem cells in the petri dish. Stem cells that for whatever reason weren't forming into xenobots. Collected hundreds of them in its little Pac-Man mouth. And a few days later, the bundle of cells became new xenobots.
This is bonkers. I'm sorry, this is bonkers. So the idea is that, I mean, we already have sort of established that form dictates function, right? So
mm-hmm.
So the only reason these things reproduced, or is it just a fit more efficient reproducing based on their Pac-Man shape?
This is the most efficient form that they've found for reproducing. Once they saw it was every once in a while, there was a new one popping up. They were like, wait, these are reproducing somehow. The computer started going like, I got ideas. And they found that this Pac-Man form was the most efficient way to get these things to reproduce.
Because it collects the individual bits together faster.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing. Those individual bits were not going to be collected at all. So these were just like, these stem cells were just stem cells that for whatever reason didn't form, right? Like maybe they were left over, like when a clump actually formed into a xenobot, there was some left over, right? Like imagine little bits of clay that are left over on the table when you're sculpting something. And so it was all these like little garbage bits. And this Pac-Man starts going around in concentrics and in its little spirals. And it's like, I'm going to collect these. And yes, because it collects them so fast and clumps them together so quickly, they reproduce. Because it's essentially what the computer is doing when the scientists are ordering it to. The computer's like, I'm going to make a robot now. Clump these cells together. The computer knows what shape it wants to clump them together in. This thing, hey, it's just like any other parent. It just wants these cells to be happy and healthy. It doesn't care what shape they're
sure,
in.
Sure, sure, sure.
You know?
So, I mean, we have to, I need to step through this because.
Step through it.
My mind is blown. My mind is blown. You have an embryo to a frog.
Yeah.
Which is a thing. It will grow theoretically into a frog. Like unless it will become a frog.
Unless you fuck with it, which we do.
Which we do, right. But it's a thing.
It's a thing.
We scrape the embryo. We scrape off some stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
We have a collection of these stem cells that aren't a thing.
Yeah.
But we get enough of them stuck together that they become a new thing that isn't a frog embryo, but is a thing that with behavior. It seems to be functional. I don't know if we could say alive. Can we say alive? But we can say it's
stem cells are. I mean, they're describing it as living.
They're describing it as a robot, right? So it has a function.
Yes,
but it can behave independently.
So do cells in your body,
right? But it can behave. It exhibits behavior.
What you want to do is you want to call it living, but you want to call it living in the scientific sense, and you don't want to anthropomorphize it, right?
Right.
But so what you want to do, attribute sentience to it yet. You know what I mean?
But it exhibits behavior that is unique to it, right? It is not behavior that would happen but for the fact that we scraped those off and clumped them together, right?
Correct. So for people that are wondering about this, we've talked about stem cells before, and we've talked about some sort of properties of stem cells. And there's a reason that we want to harvest stem cells, and that's because stem cells are sort of contextual, right? So you give stem cells to somebody, and you put it in heart. Like, so there was that
on the heart scaffolding, right? It becomes a heart
on the heart scaffolding, yeah. Right? Yeah. And stem cells see heart scaffolding and they go, oh, I'm supposed to become a heart cell.
Right.
You can put stem cells in somebody's, you know, for these therapies for people that have spinal injuries, you put stem cells in their spines and it sort of rebuilds healthier. It's like, I'm going to be a new spinal cell. I'm going to be a new nerve cell. So they take contextual clues. Now, when you remove these stem cells from the context of frog. Now they are still frog stem cells.
Right.
But they're a bit more, you know, we can tell that they're a bit more malleable than other cells are.
Well, this
computer
actually
squishes them together.
Yeah.
And says, what will you become if I squish just enough of you together? Because remember, stem cells don't divide and replicate the same way that other cells do. There's a reason we want to harvest stem cells is you create fewer and fewer of them as you get older. There's a finite number of them in a human body. That's an oversimplification, but that's essentially what's going on is it's not like a skin cell where it's just like, oh, I'm just making more skin cells all the time.
Right.
They're a little bit more limited than that. So when you squidge them together, they don't just like replicate and replicate and replicate. It's like, I am now an organism that's made of, or a structure, let's say a structure made up of this number of stem cells.
Well, this actually has added a lot of clarity for me because it does make more sense in my head when you go, okay, well, form dictates function and you say, okay, stem cell, you're on a heart scaffolding. Now you will become a heart. Like it,
right.
It figures out, oh, I'm in the context of heart. So I will become heart.
Which by the way, we're still not entirely sure why, but fuck yeah.
And then, in this In this context, it is, okay, I'm blob of these things, so I behave this way. A form of this, so I behave this way. The mind-blowing part to me is then if it collects enough of other things like it into the same sort of form, that thing will, because of that form, think it's another one of those things and behave that way. So that's why it's self-replicating, is because we have found a form that creates more forms like it.
Yes.
And so all it has to do, because it's a stem cell, is be in a certain shape, be in a certain context, and it will behave a certain way. So all we have to do is find a way to have a shape that makes, that collects those cells into other shapes like it to be self-replicating. And we did, and it's Pac-Man.
Yep.
Do I have that correct?
That is correct. Now, I will say we are not 100% sure that every time a Pac-Man collects a clump of cells, it will become another Pac-Man. But we do know that it will, you know, it will at least become another one of these robots that does something. So they can at least get, they can at least do one generation of reproduction.
Right.
And it's entirely possible, based on what you're saying, and, you know, they'll have to do a little bit more research into this. It's entirely possible that because these stem cell clumps come from a stem cell clump that did the spiral and the collection, that they are more likely to do that, but they don't really go deep into that in this paper.
Man, that is awesome.
Now, here's the thing. We know that these things are not intelligent. They don't have sentience. This is a clump of cells. Now that the clump of cells is quote unquote reproducing, do you feel differently about this technology? How does that change the way you feel or the way you think about this technology, if it does at all?
Well, I'm super jazzed to wrap my head around how this works, but it feels very limited, right? Because there's a level of complexity that must be reached for the stem cells to understand their context, right? In order to behave in a certain way. But it feels like we're nowhere near a level of complexity to actually be useful in any way, right?
Yeah.
But I guess that's where we're headed. I guess that's the end game here, is find a level of complexity that both triggers a reproduction and also is a useful shape that isn't just like bopping around, that actually does something in your blood or whatever, right?
Now, I hate it. That's an interesting, you have an interesting and very, very curious and open take to this, Jeff. I hate it. I hate that these things are reproducing. I know my brain, listen, this ain't my first science podcast. I mean, it's my first science podcast, but this isn't my first episode. I know that they're only reproducing because we created them in a specific way to reproduce. I know it only happens randomly once every bazillion times. I understand that they're not smart. They have no agenda.
They don't do anything at this point.
This is where it begins, Jeffrey. This is where it all starts.
But it feels like, look, it feels very difficult to both create a shape that will group things together in another shape like it, but also have that shape be something that does something. Does that make sense?
You're still in the amazement process, and I love that for you. I am like, yo, what happens if these things just one day decide? And by decide, I mean they're biological creatures. Biology wants to self-replicate. It wants to continue itself, right? That's one of the things that biology does. What if these things start reproducing and clumping together and just become, what happens when? Do you know what I mean? What happens when? And a lot of people are asking that. Listen, is it a stupid thing to ask? Probably. I don't care. Make me calm. I'm in a stupid reactionary mood. Make me calm, scientists. about your self-replicating fucking nanobots that you want to inject into me and shit. And they say, hey, man, you don't need to worry about that. Do you know why? You're in a lab.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing that has ever escaped a lab before. I've certainly never seen any movies about that.
They're contained in a lab. Yeah. They're contained in a lab.
All right.
Ask Frank Darabont about that.
Now, can I ask you which lab?
Ask Dustin Hoffman about that.
Is this a military lab?
This is at the University of Vermont.
All right.
They also are doing this research at Tufts and Harvard.
Okay.
But so the labs are not like high security, whatever. But, you know, they also say like, hey, these things only have a week lifespan, which maybe they can fucking figure a way around. I don't know. But also they're easily extinguished. They're biodegradable. Yeah. They have ethics experts that are overseeing these experiments. You don't have to worry. You don't have to worry, Jeff. And then I say, okay, that's cool. Hey, stem cells, I know, are pretty expensive, and the harvesting of them is a delicate process that requires, I mean, as much as I picture it in my head, you take a frog embryo and you wrap like tiny masking tape around a tiny hand and you just tap at the frog embryo the way you do if you don't have a lint brush, you know, and then you get stem cells. I know that that's not how that's done. I know the collection of this is a delicate and expensive process. Hey, Jeff, where's the money for these self-replicating robots coming from?
Is it the military?
DARPA, baby.
It's the military.
The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency.
It's the military.
It's the military.
Their entire line of reasoning for you not to get worried is them saying, don't worry, life won't find a way.
Life won't find a way. They're asking us not to trust Jeff Goldblum?
Yeah.
I've built my entire life around trusting Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. It's never gotten anyone anywhere not trusting Jeff Goldblum.
No.
Yeah.
No, you die. It killed an Attenborough. Listen, I do, like, I know it's silly. And like I said, intellectually, I understand how silly this is. On a fundamental level, my brain just says, this is where it starts. Maybe not this experiment, but somewhere along this line of research, this is where it starts. Life will find a way.
The DARPA. Eventually,
we're going to have to put one of these things, like, they're going to have like a representative in the government. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're going to have to recognize the amorphous pack blob.
The amorphous pack blob has rights. Yes.
Yeah, it has the floor. It's going to try to filibuster.
Oh, man. We got to get rid of the filibuster before these things gain sentience, right?
Oh, my God. Because here's the thing. They don't get tired. They can't stop. They're built to just go, go, go. They're meant to filibuster. They're built to obstruct laws.
Yeah. The chairman recognizes the gentleman from a frog's embryo.
Yes. Would like to cover entire land with self millions and billions of times is good.
Point of parliamentary procedure. That seems very damaging to all life other
reminder,
than you.
Reminder to esteemed colleague from North Dakota. I have floor. I have floor. I also have podium. I am growing over seat. I am growing up wall. I have floor.
We need to avoid that. I mean, yes. When you put it that way, Anthony, that does seem problematic.
Now you did ask, why are we doing this? What are the things, the uses that we have found for these? And it is kind of interesting. Microplastics in the ocean, right? If you put a bazillion D of these things into the oceans, they could collect these microplastics the same way they collect stem cells and perhaps digest them, break them down, degrade them, or just put them into collection areas where we can then remove these microplastics, which also this week, big week for plastics. We just found out that microplastics can go through the blood-brain barrier. So that's great. We're eating those every day. Congratulations to us.
Well, luckily none of our food is... Oh.
Oh, no. So these could be used for that. They could inspect root systems, right? We could put them into the ground and they could inspect systems or collect particles out of the ground for us to examine and research.
But again, we need to find a form that will do that, right? That's the trick, is the form defines function. So you have to find the form that will accomplish those tasks. They're just saying, this is the potential that we see.
Yeah. Well, but you think about these Pac-Man ones that collect tiny, tiny microparticles, which are essentially what stem cells are. They're the same size. They would be great for rounding up plastics. So those sort of things have already been found. And, you know, they're always using this supercomputer to find more patterns, to find more things that they can do. But they are yielding results in just a year, which I think is really, really fascinating. Wow. And also terrifying, because this sounds like a real fucking Cronenberg future.
This is body horror
all the way down.
I feel you, and I totally acknowledge the Cronenberg-ness of all of this, but I'm still in the amazement phase. This seems incredible to me that we just like found a way to make them into a shape that makes more of that shape and also is enough of a shape that they are independent and unique and a new thing. This is a new thing that didn't exist before that we made just by clumping them all together. And that particular clump shape means that they make more clump shapes. Like, that's fucking amazing.
Like Eddie Murphy, just more clumps. More clumps. If you need more clumps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See,
when
we talk about it in those terms, it can't be scary, right? Just think about it in Eddie Murphy terms.
It's absolutely delightful.
Family, it's a family entertainment for everybody, you know?
Yep. Until they take us over and assimilate us and destroy our way of life. Hey, thanks to Cahoots for sending that in to the Discord. Remember that you can submit stories as well, either on the Discord or through our email. We have concernedshow@gmail.com. That Discord, Jeff, it's popping off.
Popping off. It was a great place to be around Thanksgiving. I think it's going to be a great place to be throughout the holidays. Folks, maybe a little more time to hang out and chat about cool stuff. I love our community.
Yeah. If you want to join the Discord, by the way, you can. Just head to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns and support us for $1 or more every month. It is the only way we keep this podcast going. It has been a major source of income for the two of us throughout this hellscape of a 2-year period as the world is doing whatever the world do. So we appreciate you and we appreciate you supporting us. Remember, as you give more, you get more, including bonus episodes, bonus videos and audio and all kinds of extra stuff. Patreon.com/wehaveconcerns.
Anthony, you know, we always have our eyes on the skies. We're always monitoring space. Space wants to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
We're always keeping tabs on what's happening in outer Spain.
You gotta.
Because that's the new frontier, potentially.
Potentially. We have a space force. They have uniforms. It's probably the new frontier or a waste of time. Who knows?
Luckily, in our Discord, our community is on top of all the latest developments in space. And we got an article sent to us by Fneri, Phneri. Fneri. Guess what, Anthony? It finally happened. Our first alleged space crime. Space crime!
Oh, shit, dude. Space heists. Cowboy Bebop. We're on our way. This is all happening. I was not excited. Listen, you know I'm terrified of space, but if there is crime, I want in. I want in at the bottom floor of space crime.
Wait, that doesn't terrify you more that there's a rampant space crime happening now? You
want, baby, I was born for space crime.
Yeah. Well, this might not be the space crime you were hoping for, but it is the first allegation of actual space crime, of a crime committed in space. This is a report from the New York Times.
Wow.
About astronaut Anne McLean. And I'll say up front, this is a little, I don't know, it feels a little tabloidy to me, this story. But it is interesting, I think, from a science perspective. But it is a little, it's a little salacious. And not really salacious, but it's a bit just kind of yucky, you know? It just feels, yeah, a little yucky. It's people's personal business. But here's the gist.
No, wait. I thought the first space crime was when that guy brought a corned beef sandwich with him.
Well,
do you remember
for
that?
You and me, that was a space crime. But I don't think, for the law.
Do you remember that when the astronaut snuck a corned beef sandwich up to space with him?
No, I don't remember that. Don't they make it all kinds? We did a whole story about how they're making all kinds of crazy foods in space.
Yeah. But like this was... So, yeah, okay. So this was like 50 years ago, 1965.
Oh, he smuggled it? It was like an actual...
yeah, this was
supposed to do it?
Yeah, this is when they were like drinking Tang and eating goop. And yeah. You weren't supposed... You remember, like, every gram of weight has to be accounted for.
Yeah.
And they're not supposed to bring anything up that hasn't been approved and like whatever. It was John Young brought up a corned beef sandwich. He hid it in his suit because he wanted to eat a corned beef sandwich in space.
Man, I've never enjoyed a corned beef sandwich, but I guess for some people it's the thing worth risking your space career for.
Oh, you know? Baby, as this podcast representation from the Jewish delegate, I'm glad this dude brought a corned beef sandwich into space. Somebody needed to.
Right,
so I think maybe that was the first space crime.
Well, this is the first one that has gone to litigation. This is actually being brought into, is being investigated by the the NASA Office of Inspector General, specializing
Whoa.
In criminal cases.
Space is just international waters, but space.
But space. So this is astronaut Anne McLean, who is unfortunately going through a rather messy divorce with her
Yikes.
Partner. They are in the midst of a custody dispute over their young son. Again, these details are, you know, not my favorite thing to talk about. But she is in space. She was supposedly going to be one of two members of the first all-female spacewalk, but that got scrapped. But she has been accused of accessing illegally her partner's bank account while in space. Space
Yo.
Identity theft.
She used that space internet? That space internet ain't great.
Yeah.
And it's very expensive.
So,
like it's expensive and it's slow. That's like, imagine checking your email on the plane. You know how you have to try to log in 15 times?
Oh, man.
And then you're like, why did I even pay for this?
Yeah.
It's a bit like that.
I'm sure it's like that. It's got to be rough. Although maybe you're closer to the satellite. I don't know.
I seem to remember them saying, I don't know if this is still true, but I think like there's only certain times a day where it's even available, you know, because they can do videos, like they can send video back and forth if they need to, but like it's expensive and it requires proper alignment and you need to be like, it's weird. Like,
yeah.
So this means she really, really wanted to fucking sneak into that.
Yeah. Game. Yeah. Well, this is weird. So what happened is McLean's estranged wife, Summer Warden, evidently said that she was talking or communicating in some way with McLean while in space and got suspicious because McLean knew details about her spending. And so she asked her bank about the locations of devices that had used her login information to access her account. And the bank is like, space?
The IP address is space?
They said that they found a computer that was used, that was registered to something called the National Aeronautics and Space Administration? That seems odd.
Oh, Anne, no. Anne, There are a couple. So there are a couple things that immediately pop into my head, Jeff. Number one, yo, that's what you're worried about when you're in space?
I mean, you probably have a lot of downtime on your hands. I mean, you're there 24/7. There's only so much, you know, space debris you can analyze or, you know.
That's true. That's true.
There's only so many hours of sleeping, standing up in a tiny pod.
You're only allowed to bring like 20 grams of personals. Like,
yeah.
If somebody brought a ukulele, then you've got to bring something smaller. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So yeah, you're probably right. I mean, but I feel like Anne McClain, just bring a Kindle and like and like an
shit.
iPod, you know?
Yeah.
A Zune, and just hunker down with some music and a book, and like, don't use space internet to check your ex's bank account.
Probably not the best idea. Probably not the best idea. But she has admitted to it. She said there was nothing. She said that she strenuously denies that she did anything improper, that she was just trying to see and to ensure the family's financial situation was in order.
Now, so they're not divorced yet.
Correct.
Is that the idea?
That's correct.
So, I mean, I guess it is weird. Like, if I accessed your bank account, but I didn't do anything. Like, if I logged into your account, but I didn't do anything.
Right.
I don't know that that's, like, I don't know that that, is that really, like, a crime? What is the, like, probably not, right?
I don't know the details of that. I mean, I guess if I don't want you in my personal banking information and you access it without my permission,
like, it's not cool.
It's certainly not cool.
Like, it's definitely not cool, but is it like, is it illegal?
Is it illegal in space?
Well, that's the other thing is, so where does this, how do you even, if it is illegal, who takes care of that? Because certainly she logged into an American bank, an American bank server, but she did it from space. And like, what are the rules about that? Does a NASA spaceship count as American soil? Like, how does this work?
Well, they're classifying it as identity theft, which I guess is anytime I use your login information to log in myself, I guess is technically identity theft, right?
Could I have you arrested every time you log into the Patreon?
I'm pretty sure we both own that, but, you know, maybe.
I guess it's whoever gets the other one arrested first, then, as we always thought it would be.
I just better be sure not to do it from space.
Is it double? Is it double punishment if it's from space? Does NASA have like a law tribunal? How does any of this work, Jeff?
That's the awesome thing about this story is that they have to fucking figure it out for the first time. They have to figure it out. They're literally figuring it out. They have this Michael Mattea, who's the investigator from NASA's Office of Inspector General, is literally like writing the book on how this works, you know? And they have yet to respond. The Trade Commission, Federal Trade Commission, hasn't responded to the report of identity theft yet. But NASA is like, I mean, I feel like NASA, because it's NASA and it's not some private space company, they probably have a higher standard that they would apply to their, you know, they want to be squeaky clean. So I'm sure they may have some sort of punishment here, but like, well, they have to figure out space laws. Like, do all Earth laws apply in space? Do some Earth laws apply in space? Are terrestrial banks off limits to space people? I think that's a really cool, these are questions.
Yeah. Well, and this is weird because, like, you're right. Nobody who's been in space, I mean, at least that we know of, like, nobody who's been in space is like, even thought to break a law up there. Like, I don't know.
They have more stuff to do usually. They're busier. And
yeah, like normally, okay, the first time I ever understood that an astronaut had downtime was when what's his name, the Canadian guy that we all really love, who would play the ukulele and sing David Bowie songs and pour out water, Chris Hadfield. When Chris Hadfield was like doing dumb shit in space, was like, oh, they got time to do dumb shit in space.
Right.
That was the first time I ever thought about that. But like, damn, petty crime in space.
I mean, I'm sure if you're up in space and you've got a kid with your wife that you're worried about who's going to get custody of, you're probably thinking about that a lot. You got a lot of alone time. You're in space.
No, I would, you know, I would become obsessive. You know, I would become obsessive.
You know what, Anthony? You might be weightless, but that doesn't mean the weight of the world still isn't on your shoulders.
Ooh, you got to carry that weight. That's Cowboy Bebop reference number two. So like, yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. Like, I think about, you're sitting alone in a small, quiet space.
Space.
And yeah, man. I mean, you got coworkers there with you, but like, maybe not like your closest pals.
Yeah, maybe you're not. Maybe they're not good conversationalists. You don't know.
You don't know.
You don't get to pick who you're in space with.
And then maybe like, and then maybe you're also the sort of person who doesn't share that sort of stuff very easily.
It's personal
and
stuff.
So like maybe you're just sitting in space stewing. I'll tell you what a horrible way to spend your time in space. Imagine spending your entire life getting ready to go to space and like putting in the sort of training that these astronauts put in. And then you go to space and like, you're so preoccupied with this other shit in your life that
that's heartbreaking.
It is kind of heartbreaking because you're looking out that window and there's Earth and you're like, I'm in space.
You're one of how many total people ever that have achieved what you achieved? And you're still like thinking about your failed. Oh, man, that's going to suck.
And you're just like, man, all I know is that when we land and I'm no longer in space, I've got so much paperwork. This is going to cost so much money. You know what I mean?
It's such a, you know, space people. They're just like us.
They're just like us. So I'm looking at the story right now. And Anne McClain says that like, yo, this is the password that we both always used. We both always looked at each other's accounts. Even though that like where
it's the same password. It's spacewalk 123. You know, I don't understand.
It's space is more important than family one. And I don't understand why this marriage is falling apart. But I think like this is one of those things that is just like an acrimonious divorce thing, right? Where it's like, well, we've always checked in on each other's accounts. And until we get divorced, we are still sharing this money.
Yeah. And one person's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, but one person's like, no, there are new boundaries now.
I thought I'd at least be able to not have to think about you while you're in fucking space. You left the planet and I still have to worry about you messing with my business?
Yeah, like, oh my God, you're in space and you're still you're still asking to look at my phone? You still want to know who's DMing me and you're in space?
I paid the electric bill and just be in space for once.
That's rough. Man, that's...
We're fine down here on Earth. Just mind your space business.
You're literally up there for like 2 weeks. Can I get 2 weeks? Can I get two fucking weeks? One of the things that I love about this is that there is... it says there is a global space law center.
Whoa.
And there's at Cleveland State University, which, by the way, what up, Cleveland? And there's a director of the Global Space Law Center, and like people are thinking about space laws. I love that this has kicked like the cottage space law industry into full gear. Like they weren't ready for it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're never ready for the first space crime, you know?
No, you're never. Hey. You're always going to remember your first space crime. So what's the deal? What are they going to do about this? What do we think the resolution of
TBD,
this is?
You know, TBD. They have to figure it out. This guy, Michael Mattea, who's the investigator, has to figure out what, if any, punishment or what will happen? What's the word I'm looking for?
Precedent.
Thank you. What's the precedent for this? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, if we're going to be up there, we're going to be up there and I'm going to do all the things that I do down here up there. And let me tell you some of them are illegal. What are you getting? So if you want to do something about it, you better codify these laws before I get up there.
It's going to be corned beef sandwiches and identity theft way down.
Corned beef sandwiches and identity theft. I haven't done anything yet in my life to make that my memoir title. I mean, I have. I've eaten corned beef sandwiches, but like, I would like it to be a fitting memoir title at some point.
Yeah.
That's my new goal. How quickly do you think, Jeff, how quickly do you think we have to come up with space law? How important
evidently
is this?
Very quickly, according to Anne. You know, Anne's kind of pushing the envelope on this one.
Space law. I want to get up there while there's still very few laws, while all the laws are related to identity theft and sandwiches.
Yeah. You know, you got to make use of the window where anything goes.
How long do you think until we have the first murder in space?
I mean,
how many people have to go to space before we have the first murder?
Slippery slope from identity theft to murder, you know?
It really is. It's a gateway crime. this is wild. We're going up. I mean, it's billionaires now, but who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, as long as it's just billionaires, there will be no laws in space. They're going to make sure of that.
That's true. Yeah.
It's only when you and I go up into space and billionaires are worried, that's when they're going to create real laws.
Yeah.
Space law.
Space law. Okay.
Huh. I'm just thinking about how soon I can get up there and if I can commit any crimes.
Hey, you would like to discuss space law and how fast we need to make it happen, why not visit our Discord?
Yeah, help me plan a space crime. Let's figure out what the most likely crime that we could get away with would be, that we could perpetrate.
That's
and get
a good
away
one.
With.
What is the perfect space crime?
Oh, you murder him with an icicle. And then when the icicle
in
melts.
Space, it's just water floating weightlessly in the ISS.
Yeah. Hit us up in the Discord and let's plan a space crime. Once again, if you want to do that, head to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. Thank you to everybody who's been supporting us throughout our return and throughout the entire, 6-7 years we've been doing this.
What?
We really appreciate it.
It's way too long.
It's way too long. We're going to keep going though. patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. We'll see you next week.